Dave Mehrsch is a Juno Award-winning comedian with 20 years in the game. He's been on shows like Mr. D and the award-winning Rami, which you can catch on Hulu right now. We talked about what it was like growing up in Windsor, since we're both from that city, and also what it was like doing comedy in Detroit.
I heckled somebody, or somebody heckled me, and I was like, man, you ain't gonna do shit. I forgot what I said, and he was like, I won't. And he gets up and he's like, don't make me go to that trunk. And I'm like, what? And then he left. And then my boy was with me. And then the comics were like, you got to get out. I go, what do you mean? Like, you got to get out now. So then we just left, went back to Windsor.
We also discussed his first ever trip to Lebanon and what he did there.
I went to my dad's village, or sorry, his city, Zahle. I went to Serhel, where my mom's from. We randomly met her, my grandmother's cousin, who took us to the home they grew up in. I FaceTimed my mom.
Wild.
I FaceTimed my grandmother, showed them their house, church they go to. I FaceTimed all my brothers and my sister, showed them, like, yo, this is where mom grew up. This is where mom was born physically.
And lastly, we talked about Dave's increasing roles in films and his latest project, which was featured at the Sundance Film Festival, Sometimes I Think of Dying, which also features Daisy Ridley. Dave, welcome to the pod. Big fan of your comedy in the last few months. I watched you live in Windsor. Absolutely crush.
Oh, thank you very much.
Thanks for being on the show.
No, thank you for having me. Are you from Windsor originally? Or are you living there? You're there now.
I was born in Serbia and I moved to Canada when I was 7. So I lived in Windsor for the last 24 years and now I moved to Spain. Well, actually a few months ago.
Wow, man. And what are you doing in Spain? That's so cool.
Yeah, I have an engineering degree and I absolutely fucking hated that. So I switched into digital marketing so I can work remotely. And I kind of fell in love with Spain. So I just said, fuck it, I'm going to move here. And I mean, let's be honest, me and you are both from Windsor. You know, we can talk shit about Windsor, right?
Yeah. Like, did you go visit Spain, obviously? And then you're like, I fell in love with this place?
Yeah, I traveled all over the world. I was looking, because I always felt like I wasn't in the right place in Windsor. And I decided, hey, I'm going to travel the world a little bit. I've been to like 20 different countries. And I don't know what it is about this city, specifically Valencia in Spain. I just knew I kind of fell in love with it when I got here. And then from that moment on in 2019, I literally changed my entire life to be here. Switched careers, learned Spanish. Yeah, I'm blessed to be here. Sí, podemos hablar en español si quieres, papi. No te preocupes.
That's crazy. That I love.
Super love random, this. Right?
I love it.
My guy, tell me how you got into comedy. I'm a big comedy fan. I've made some stupid videos myself. I wish you were, you know, from my time. Like, I wish you were a bit younger. We would have definitely been making some videos. I feel like some stupid videos if we were in the same time frame.
Oh, in the same like high school and stuff like
that. If we
were
in the same generation, like if, like, I don't know, Shaq and Kareem got to play together in the same time. I don't know.
I don't know how to explain it properly. If it's when I say this, I just at 14, I told my best friend at the time I want to do stand up, but I always wanted to like entertain. Since I was a child, I felt it. Like, I didn't know I was, like, kind of doing it or had the intention maybe of, like, it was going to be a future. I don't know. Like, I just would make my, you know, try to make my mom laugh or my aunt laugh, or I would have, like, my cousin and my sister make fake, like, talk shows. But I didn't really know. I wasn't, like, all this is going to, you know, it's just in me, I guess. And I felt the need to do it, you know?
That's how most pursuits that are, like, highly successful end up going. It's like from this pure place of like, I don't really give a shit why. I don't care about the money. I just love doing it and then I'll fucking figure it out. And like, you know, survivorship bias. There's a lot of people that don't succeed, but there's a lot of people also that do succeed, right?
Yeah, I think I just kind of was like, this is fun. I remember I would make tapes with my sister, Mary, and my cousin Danny. And my uncle got mad once. We played him the tape. We made a Michael Jackson joke and he got so pissed. And then he told my mom and his mom, my cousin's mom.
He tried to cancel you? What?
Yeah, he tried. So I just remember yeah, we make these like at my grandmother's this house. We, because my cousin lived upstairs from my grandmother's, with his family, we would make these like fake talk shows where I would be like, I'm gonna be this famous person, you two be these famous people. We would try to do their imitations.
Dope. You just kind of fell in love with comedy from that point on, or how did we go into like actually doing stand-up?
Stand-up, my uncle Brian, you know, Canadian guy, he married into the family. He showed me, I remember he showed us, he played like Eddie Murphy, like stand-up specials. And somehow I saw Richard Pryor. I don't know if it was through him, but I remember watching a Richard Pryor special at home with my mom. I think, I don't know, I maybe can, like when I was older, I convinced her, maybe it was when I was around 14, kind of convinced her to let me watch it or something like that. And I fell in love with his bit. He had a bit where he, I talk about this bit all the time too. It's like where he plays he's doing a character like a heroin addict in a wino. And then the heroin addict tells the wino to like help him shoot up. And he does this whole thing where it was like, not even stand up anymore. It was like acting, and it was like, wow. I remember being like, oh, I want to do that.
You also talk a lot about like loving rap. Like, how come you didn't, I mean, you've seen live rap shows. How come like you didn't go down that route, I guess? Maybe that's a stupid question.
No, it's not. I mean, I talk about rap so much, but I remember, I think my cousin Rob and his boy Joey, who I used to be good best friends with, his younger brother, I think, did they show us rap? We were like young, and they showed us, they probably shouldn't have been showing us rap music. And I think they showed us Snoop Dogg's Doggy Style album, which was crazy, like at the time, like it was like booming so much, like it was so big. Right. And I just remember being like, what is this? And then I somehow convinced my mom to buy me the tape. And then when she listened to it, finally, she ripped it up. It was like a tape, but she pulled the thing in front of me. Really how rap should be brought in.
Right.
Like, there's so much edge to it. Now there's really, I don't feel there's that much of an edge to it because times have changed. But I felt like you were like, oh my God, we were doing something, you know, bad here. And I just really... I don't know. I just knew I couldn't rap.
Right. You ever try it? You ever try to freestyle?
Once at a comedy, I did drunk. I did. And then somebody, a friend of ours, recorded it too. And he played it back. And I was like, this sounded crazy. But I remember doing a comedy freestyle battle type show. And I was awful. And I was like, I'm never doing this again.
This is a perfect chance to be. I'm also a big rap fan. I was going to ask you this because you talk about like petty beefs and random rap battles. I don't know if you ever talk about like DMX and Jay-Z apparently had like a 3-hour rap battle.
Yeah,
and
I've seen clips. I've never seen that. I've seen clips of people talking about that for sure.
And like Jay-Z, I don't know if Jay-Z said DMX won or DMX said he won, but like the rumor is that DMX won that battle against Jay-Z. I was wondering if you knew about that.
No, I don't know. I know about the story. And I remember Jay-Z was talking about, like, you know, when they were doing the tour together, the Rough Riders and Rockefeller tour.
Yeah.
And explained following DMX and how crazy it was.
Like DMX was wild.
Like how intense it would be to follow him and stuff like that.
Yeah, because he had so much energy.
Yeah, it's actually on the LeBron James show, The Barbershop, if you ever look at the clip. And he takes you through it. Yeah, he takes you through his vulnerabilities to it, his him at the side of the stage being like, holy, because like he's like, you know, everyone was growling. You know, DMX would do the whole thing.
Of course. Yeah. R.I.P. So then when's your first stand-up show? When did you do your first stand-up show?
When I was in, was it Yuck Yucks? It was either a Yuck Yucks amateur. No, it was a Yuck Yucks competition called Funniest Comic. They were looking for the funniest comic in Canada. And I auditioned in Windsor. And it wasn't good. It was like I was trying
to cram. How old were you?
19.
19? Wow, that's late. That's kind of late, right?
It's
late. No?
Yeah, it's like I didn't think you can go to the bar until you were 19. I didn't realize you could bring your parents. That was on me. So I did it. I crammed 7 minutes into 3 minutes. It felt like it was pretty fast. Or it was, I put on a show. I think I can't remember the order, but I put on a show with two other, a comic from London, at like, and my college classmates came, and it was rough. I didn't do good.
Damn. Were they good friends?
I remember Bobby. Huh?
Did they like try to laugh and pretend to laugh?
I can't even remember, man. I remember going, hanging out with my friend Aaron after, rest in peace, Aaron. We were walking in our neighborhood, and he was like, I was like, bro, I was so depressed. I was like, I bombed so bad. And I remember Aaron being like, yo, it don't matter, bro. I think you're funny. I know you're funny.
Damn.
And I remember that's we huge. Had like this, you know, walk through the city or just in our neighborhood. We lived right near each other. And I felt he genuinely wasn't doing it as well to be like, I'm your buddy. I have to say these things. It was this thing because we would always make each other laugh. But if I made him laugh good, I knew I was on to some. So I remember those words were very like helpful at the time. I got to tell him that. Yeah. But yeah.
I mean, that's a moment where you can go one of two ways, right? Like you can quit and maybe not. Maybe that was I don't know how like traumatic that bombing was.
It was
maybe
very really,
you ate a lot of dick off though there. You ate a lot of dick off there. Okay, well,
so. It was in front of my whole college class, basically.
So I just did you have to go back to school on Monday? Yeah,
100%. I had to go back for the whole semester, bro. I think we had another year. I couldn't even remember, man. It was bad.
Damn. All right. Shit. And then from that point on, you went back to, what did you go back to? What was your first time back?
Well, first of all, I was trying to go as a character called Dirty Leb. It was so bad, bro.
Dirty what? Dirty what? I'm sorry. Dirty what?
Dirty Leb. L-E-B. So it was like pretty bad. And then I think I started to do that. The club manager at the time at the Windsor Yuck Yucks would give me 5 minutes on the Thursdays. So I was doing like guest spots. So I did go after it. I still went after. Like, I wasn't going to – I just think Aaron's words at the time and the age for me was, like, reassuring. Like, I don't think I was going to quit. But, I mean, I was, like, I needed some kind of, like, motivation. And I think Aaron being there and Aaron and us being so close to each other was very helpful.
How did you write that first, I guess, stand-up? Did you, like, write something down? Did you just go up on stage and free ball? What was the game – is there a game plan when you go up the first time?
I didn't know how to do comedy, so I just knew I was funny. So I was just writing my conversations down with people. And then somebody introduced me to this book called, it was by Judy Gold, The Comedy Bible. And then I went and I learned the rules and all that. And then I started to write everything down that, like, I learned the structure and I would write everything down. So when I started, I was very diligent and write everything fully down.
It's one thing to be funny in front of your friends. I feel like I have that too. Like, I don't know. I feel like 3 to 5 is like my sweet spot with my, like, but that's another thing I feel like probably to write and go on stage and do in front of a crowd.
It's a different science, man. It's like,
yeah.
And I think people don't understand that. I think people are like, they look at somebody who's well-crafted and put so much dedication and they're like, oh, I could do it. It's truly because it's not a skill that like, it's like, because everybody has somebody in their crew that thinks they're funny. Right. Not everybody in the crew has someone that plays a violin, plays a piano, right.
Sure.
Or raps. You know what I mean? Humor is like people think they're funny when they're actually not funny as well.
Right. True.
See what I'm saying? Like people actually true. Like because it's skewed. It's like they're funny around their friends. But I mean, you're not funny around. You know,
right.
Whatever you built with your friends isn't going to work with everybody else. So I think
that's
like,
true.
You know, I've been with people. I've hung out with people that go to me. They're like, man, I'm funny. I could do stand up. I go, nah, you're not even funny. You're not even funny.
Who told you you're funny? Get the fuck out of here.
It's like you make your friends laugh. It's cool. But like, you know, we're
it's a different animal.
Professionals on a large scale that got rewarded for being funny because they can move a crowd.
Yeah.
So then
and any crowd movement, on any night.
Any crowd on any given night, any energy, any mood they're in. So this is the disrespect comedy gets is that some
crazy
some person who grew up in some town made their friends laugh a bit, now carries that arrogance that they're funny people.
Crazy.
They're not. They're
crazy.
Not. I can guarantee you we put you in front of 5 people.
Oh, I'll eat dick. I need dick.
In a back place space of a bar at midnight.
Gobble it. I'm gobbling it.
Yeah.
You know what I love watching? Because I've had another comedian on the show. I love watching the old specials and then going up to the new ones. And you just see that, like, just building and getting better and better with timing, storytelling. I Love You, Habibi was, like, I was perfect. Like, it was a combination of all those years of effort. To me, it was such a well-made special. And I really enjoyed it. Like, I love seeing that journey. That's the beauty of, like, this generation. You see that full journey on YouTube and you see, like, your whole progress.
Yeah. And that one was, you know, that comes down to, like, I wanted to, you know, years of dedication and putting in the steps and also putting together a proper, you know, rap albums really inspire me. So, like, you know, how they're designed and how they're put together. So that for me is important. So I wanted to put something together that was a bit different, but also, you know, I had another good friend of mine who's a very funny comedian, Paul Elia, consult with me, and we built this act together. You know, I mean, we built the structure of it together. He's also a very, very funny comedian, and he understands tags, punchlines, timing, and stuff like that. So we put that whole thing together, and it took us, like, you know, a bit to put it together.
I mean, how long have you been doing comedy? 20 years?
I would say, around almost pushing on 20. Like, I started seriously in college, so I would say around 24, and I'm 42.
That's wild.
Yeah.
I was going to ask you this. What's the biggest thing you think, like, difference from your earlier stuff to, like, your current stuff in terms, like, is it pacing? Is it your, I think storytelling has gotten so much better. Like, you have a way better flow with stories, but what do you think is the biggest change?
I think, slowing down, I guess, and trusting myself and believing in myself more up there was probably the biggest change. Believing, you know what I mean? I used to, you know,
like, you think you're going to lose the audience if you tell a story that's too long or what?
Or just, like, you know, you always, the idea that I had to get laughs every second or crush or kill or whatever the case was, you know, that for me.
Like, allowing that moment for the story to build up, right? Allowing that.
Yeah.
Yeah. 100%. Interesting. That's interesting. And then when did you start doing acting? When did you start getting some acting gigs?
I always wanted to act from the beginning. It was, like, the process of, like, I would always think, you know, I thought, like, if I found my voice you know, people could see me and I can get into TV roles. And I also took acting classes and stuff like that. And I would audition, but it was always a thing I wanted to do. That was the goal, was to get into stand up, then acting, TV.
Really?
Movies. So that was always the goal. I really wasn't super, super vocal about it with people. Like, except if you were super close to me, I would be vocal about it. But it wasn't a thing that I was, like, so vocal about it. So it might have caught some of my friends and peers off guard, maybe.
Just trying to be a comedian is already a pretty crazy dream. But then going into acting seems like an even next level. Like, you have to get really lucky or know someone or years of dedication. It seems like an even crazier dream, right?
It is. They're both crazy, wild dreams. I just kind of always... You know what? It was, like, always in my system.
Yeah.
In a sense that it's something I wanted to do again when I was young and didn't know. Like, I would, like, admire, like, Chris Tucker, and, you know, I'd see how he, you know, always wanted to be in a buddy cop movie. You know what I mean? Like, Eddie Murphy.
Right.
Like,
Martin Lawrence.
Yeah. Martin Lawrence was big for me. That's all I wanted to be.
Martin Lawrence was enormous.
So I would look at that. So I always had it in me, in a sense that this is what I wanted to do. I wanted to be like Martin Lawrence. And then Jim Carrey's and stuff like that.
Jim Carrey's too, yeah. You did some shows in Detroit. I want to hear some stories about Detroit stand-up scene.
I started open micing there since I was, like, in my mid-20s. And it was super helpful because, you know, I met a lot of people that were, like, are still my friends. You know what I mean? That was really the scene I started in, if I think back about it. You know, like, and I'm still friends with Mike Bobbitt, who I started with in... Very funny comic in Detroit, in the Michigan area. You know, Jeffrey Ford. These are people I started with and stuff like that. And
what's the scene like? Is it the big scene, right?
At the time?
Yeah.
Yeah, there was, like, a lot of comedy clubs. You had Mark Ridley's Comedy Castle. You had Joey's in Livonia. Joey's in Dearborn. You had Holly, Michigan, the club down there. You had Bean's Comedy Kitchen. Coco's Club. But Mark Ridley's was the one that, like, you know, a lot of people – would hang out at too. You had Heidelberg, Ann Arbor Comedy Showcase. There was a lot of places you can perform, and the clubs too. Like, so their amateur nights were just at the club, and you'd get, like, real audience members.
Damn. And you get spots, like, regularly?
After a while, and then we did Club Barts, which was in you. The stage was behind the bar. It was like a workout room, basically.
Really?
I mean, yeah, I put in my time. So after I put in my time, for sure, I got spots.
Any crazy stories? Like, I mean, Detroit's wild. You on any given
yeah,
night?
Club Barts. I heckled somebody, or somebody heckled me, and I was like, "Man, you ain't gonna do shit." I forgot what I said, and he was like, "I won't." And he gets up and he's like, don't make me go to that trunk. And I'm like, what? And then he left. And then my boy was with me. And then the comics were like, you got to get out. I go, what do you mean? Like, you got to get out now. So then we just left and went back to Windsor. We just got,
holy fuck.
We got in his whip and we just dipped.
Did you see that viral video of that one? I think it was in Detroit. This guy was talking shit to a comic and then he goes up on stage and then the comic starts talking shit back to him. And then the comic pulls out a gun on him, and he's like, sit your ass back down. And then the guy, like, runs off.
I think I did. I mean, I wasn't.
You weren't strapped? Oh, come on, dude.
No, I wasn't strapped, bro. I left right away. I went back to Windsor.
I mean, you're from Canada, where they're like, oh, this nice little Canadian boy here in Detroit. Yeah. Is there a lot of that?
I mean, I remember I seen somebody... The comic was heckling, or not, you know, comic was just doing crowd work in Detroit, and the guy was like, gets up, and he's like, don't let me, you know, he motioned towards a strap. I didn't see the strap. But, I mean, yeah, there was a couple times where I saw that and stuff like that, but nothing, like, crazy, like, nothing happened, you know, thank God.
Thank God, right. How did you get the role on Rami? How did that happen?
I've known Rami
jumping around random topics. So this is just random things that I had to ask you.
I know Rami before the show. So I did comedy with him at the Arab Comedy Festival. He was doing sketch, I believe. And I was doing stand up. So I had built, he was like my homie, you know, and I remember when he got the pilot and he was like, do you want to audition? I was like 100%. And that's how that kind of like, and I, wow. I sent the self tape in, and from there, that's how I got the pilot basically.
Do you see a lot of similarities in your upbringing as to him in the show? Like his parents and like, you know, he's Egyptian, but similar kind of home.
Like I know his real parent. Like I'm good, close friends with him. So I've been to the family's house. Like I know the family well, like everybody well. So I mean, there's a similarities from the show to my family, 100%. Like, you know, I got an uncle that wilds out. A dad that wilds out and says some wild shit.
Controversial stuff.
Yeah, and then the mom, you know, there's a lot of stuff. The relationship between mom and the sister. There's similarities between my mom and my sister. There's a lot of stuff that I can draw from and that I go, oh, yeah. That's why that show's so beautiful is that, it's sharing not only a Middle Eastern or a Muslim, like, experience. I mean, a lot of, like, people have experienced those type of emotions, I think, with their parents and what they're going through, and religion, whatever your religion is. So yeah, I see similarities.
I think it's like one of those shows that if people from outside, from other cultures, maybe that, I don't want to say they're racist, but let's say they're a little hesitant towards a certain, like the Middle Eastern people or whatever, like you watch that show and you're like, man, we all got the same, like we're all got the same problems. We all got some, like there's a beautiful like thing we can all kind of take from it. And like, brings us together, right? Like I want to make my parents watch a show, like Eastern European parents. Like I feel like they were like, oh, yeah. Why is this a show of our lives? Like this seems like it's our world. Like that's moving to Canada, like, all the norms. Yeah.
If you get past that, whatever idea in your head that may hinder you from wanting to watch it, you can understand that there's a lot of similarities, and you'll see the similarities, and it's a beautiful connection. You know that there's something out there for you like that to be like, oh yeah, we do that. It's so comforting.
We're not so different. We're more. We got more similarities than we got differences.
I mean, yeah, it's like basic feelings, man. It's like when people like, you know, it's like we all are, you know, we all hurt by the same things.
Yeah.
In the end, we all hurt by the same things, like whether it's relationships, family problems, you know what I'm saying, ourselves, not believing in ourselves. It's like, well, we spend so much time hiding that stuff from each other. Do you know what I'm saying?
The episode got me was the dad one. Sorry to interrupt you. The episode that got me was the dad one. The like when his dad, it was the whole episode about his dad, the backstory of his dad.
In season
like,
3.
Like I cry like a bitch. Yeah, I cry like a bitch. I'm not going to lie to you.
Yeah. Because it's like, you know, you're supposed to put on this front and this masculinity and this strength.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of our dads go through that shit. A lot of our dads, like, you know, hide their feelings or their emotions until they get older. And then you can see a break. You could see it in their eyes.
Yeah.
You see it in their eyes that they don't know how to, like, express themselves anymore.
Cope with it.
Yeah.
It's
so far gone. They don't know how to cope with it. And then they're, you know, whatever they passed on to you. So it's like all this. That's why I think these TikTok videos are so funny, where like these men try to tell these other men, you know what I'm saying, to go to the gym.
Yeah, how to be, yeah.
How to be a man, you know what I mean?
There's nothing wrong going to,
you should go to the gym for health. There's nothing to be about being a man. The gym is just the health thing to get into shape.
Everyone goes to the gym. It has nothing to do with men.
It's like this idea that going to the gym is going to impress women. It's just like so bullshit.
It's nonsense.
And then you put in all this work for 3 months, and then a girl will tell you that, you know, I like a little bit of a gut, and you're like, you look like a loser.
Yeah.
You spent 3 years trying to get a six pack for some.
She's like, I like dad bod.
Yeah, like a dad bod. You're looking like a clown now.
Imagine you find a girl you really fucking like, and then you like start fucking hitting the gym hard. Yeah, no.
Yeah. She's like, nah, man, I'll fuck with a dad bod. So I just think it's, I don't know. That's.
God, you don't want to share more of that story. Yeah.
No.
You stopped. You're like, fuck this.
No, we was cool. I don't even think we were dating, but when she told me that, I was dying laughing. I was like, that's hilarious.
That's so funny. You also talk a lot about like going to therapy and all that stuff. This is another stupid question, but like, are you ever worried that if you do get cured, in quotations for you that are listening, like that you're going to lose a little bit of that funniness? I don't know. Is that weird to ask?
No, it's not. I thought that's what kept me from not going.
Really? So yeah.
Yeah, 100%. That's one of the reasons that kept me not going. And then when I went, I was like, man, that was dumb. I should have went a long time ago.
Right.
My health is just way more important than my perception on stage or jokes or anything like that. So I'd rather I don't think I'll be cured, to be honest with you.
Yeah, okay. Cured was not the right – that's not the word I meant. But you get what I'm saying.
Obviously. I get what you're saying. Yeah. It's like I think that'll be just another chapter. I think whatever comes from me being better through therapy, I can take whatever that is and make that just as funny as the shortcomings I had or the stresses I had. So I look at it that way, you know, because I used to look at it the other way, and that really – messed up my health. And you know, now I kind of was like, man, I wish I would have got therapy a lot sooner. I suggest that for anybody trying to get better.
There's also another thing with like your life being content in a way, right? Is that also a weird thing, because you're always looking for new inspirations, new material? Is there ever a time where you're like, man, you know, this is funny, but this isn't content, like this is life?
Yeah, there's some stuff that is too personal, I think, that I haven't brought yet. But I think eventually it'll find its way when you get comfortable and with it and able to talk about it. And I think there's nothing wrong with that. I think it makes the best art for me is when it's the most honest. I think I get the best out of both. I get like a therapeutic release, and then I also get a good creativity outcome from it. So, yeah.
The opposite side of this, I think it's a negative one. It's like the vloggers that record like every fucking moment of their existence. Like that stuff is always scary to me. Like
that's not the same, obviously. Yeah, it's not the same. I grew up in a different generation, and I, you know, that stuff I don't really care to do, because I want to package it more of like, you know, through not saying that isn't artistic, but I want to package it differently. It's just how I want to package it.
Right? That's the key there. Doing it tastefully, right?
Yeah, and it's like I want to deliver it in a stand-up piece or an acting piece. That's how I want to deliver it. I don't want to deliver it in a blog, but that's nothing against them.
Yeah, I got what you're saying, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It's just like it's how I want it to be put out.
The reason I kind of ask is because I've been making content for a while now, YouTube videos, all kinds of stuff. I do it for companies. I do it for my own stuff. I do the podcast. And this last 4 months living in Spain have been like probably more eventful than the last like 10 years in Windsor. Like there's been crazy shit that's happened. I'm wondering how to like, do I write a book? What's the angle here? Like I have so many crazy stories. Like a couple weeks ago, I almost got robbed or almost got killed by like what I thought was the Italian mob. A few nights ago, we got robbed. These are all negative stories. There's positive ones. Yes. Obviously, I'm just remembering those ones. There was one where I went for New Year's to like an all Argentinian like New Year's party. That was wild. How do I get this out there, man? Like these are, I'm worried that I'll lose these stories, you know?
I mean, you gotta, again, it's like, it's, I feel it's like whatever is your pocket. You know what I mean? If it is, that's what I mean by like, no offense against anybody. It's like some people are just really great at doing blogs or vlogs or however you want to do it. And they put it out there. You got to find the lane that's best for you.
When you see guys like Mo and Rami having their own shows, does it make you think like you want to have something similar down the road, or is that not something you have in your sights?
No, I've always wanted to have my own show too. Like since I was like younger, I just, you know, I got to find, it's like finding the right fit. You know, there was like a line from like, I think it was a Drake line. He said, fuck around and shoot the wrong video.
Right.
And that always stuck. I don't know if that was about his own video, but it always stuck with me in a sense. Like, I want to find the right, you know, vehicle
for it. Right.
Not that if you find the wrong vehicle, you're never going to get another chance, but I'd rather find the right vehicle. So, you know, within time, inshallah, whatever is the right show and the right people to work with, it'll find its way. But I do want one.
And there's also that element of like, you need to put something out to know what's good and what's not. It's always like this balancing act, right? Of like putting a little bit out there and not putting anything out there to get better. You can't get better without putting anything out, right?
Exactly.
So it's always a balancing act, right? But yeah, that's interesting. I had some other questions I had in my little notes. You did comedy in Lebanon. I want to hear about this.
I did it. And now I have to give really, that's not me, actually me. I was going to Lebanon just because I've never been to Lebanon. So stand-up really wasn't on my mind. I honestly wouldn't have performed if it wasn't for my boy, who's also a very funny comedian, Paul Aaliyah. He does a show called Low Key Comedy. So it's like this riffing where I usually host with him. You know, it was originally started.
Is it the Immigrant Podcast?
Yeah, but it was originally, it's a stand-up show. So it's a stand-up show where it started with Matt Rife and Paul out of LA. They did this during the COVID and you couldn't do anything. So they did an outside, it was called Low-Key. It was outside basically. They did it on a pickup truck where they would improvise together and then they would bring on a comic, they'd do their set and then it would come back and improvise. So that's
some Chappelle in Ohio shit right there.
Kind of like that, yeah.
That's hype.
So what happened was now I co-host with Paul. So Paul turned it into a brand and his brand basically now. And so what happened with that is that he set it up in Lebanon. There's a production out there called Awkward and they do comedy shows in Beirut and I think all over as well. And they worked together to set it up. So they did a low key Lebanon basically. And we did two shows. I think it was about 200 people per show. So we hosted both shows.
Did you crush? Was it good?
No, we didn't. I mean, we did better the second show, I'll tell you. The first show, we were just learning the culture and the audience. And we had some tips from our friend Natalie Akar, who's from Lebanon, but has lived in New York for a long time. Very funny Lebanese comedian. Just very funny comedian, sorry, in general. So she was on the show because she was in Lebanon and she gave us tips and guided us to have a better second show. But the comics on the show killed, you know what I mean? There was locals. And then we had Selma Hindi, she lives in New York, but she's Canadian. She was out there with us and she jumped on. So, and the people, the comics from Lebanon were amazing.
Were they Arabic? Were they doing it in Arabic or doing it in French?
Both.
We did both.
Yeah, they did both. But when they did
savages.
One sec.
No worries.
So it was like completely like just a cultural, not shock, but it was great. It was like, you know, the crowd was good. I mean, just me and Paul were just learning, bro. We didn't know. Yeah. I made jokes that probably were insensitive. I just didn't know. I only was in Lebanon for like 6 days and I've never been. So
did they like a lot of the dad stuff, like the dad stories? I imagine those crush.
I think, yeah. And when you do the duo act, it's the duo act is like different too. We have to keep that in. It's my boy Cam.
Yeah, of course. That was amazing. I was just thinking about the clip.
I'm in New York. I'm my boy Graham K's crib. He's a very funny comedian. He's from Ottawa originally. He's got like you know, he's
was that him or
that was him?
Okay.
I live in LA, so he's got like a 2-bedroom out here. So I was just staying with him for the month just to hang out and look for an apartment down here in New York. So he needed quarters. I think he's doing laundry. No. He's like funny ass comedian. He's got a Crave special. His new special's on YouTube. He's done Dope, tonight bro. Shows, Graham K.
If he wants to come on the pod,
if you're listening,
let me know.
You know, download all his shit. He's really, really funny.
I'd love to have him on. We're talking about the dad stuff. Did it crush?
Oh, I didn't really. I think we did. We did all, because it was 2 shows. So we did like a really bunch of other stuff. We did everything kind of thing. I can't remember if we did. I mean, that duo show is different because you're really improvising. So it's like sometimes we'll set each other up for bits, but I don't remember if there was that many dad bits that show.
That show? There's also a show that Dave Attell does with, what's his name?
Jeff Ross.
Is it like this kind of, is it different?
No, because it's like we're not really making fun of each other all the time. It's more of like, you know, there are similarities. It's more we go up and we're riffing with each other together.
Yeah.
Like we'll do, he'll be like, hey, set me up for these jokes. I'll set you up for these jokes. Or we're just going to be like sometimes making fun of each other, but that's really not all the time.
Oh, dope.
And then we dip with the crowd. And then the comic, we bring on a comic. They do 7-10 minutes. Then we come back on and we riff with them.
Have you ever done one of those shows in Windsor or no?
No, we did this show in Detroit though. He's from Detroit. Paul's from Michigan. So we did one this past Christmas.
That sounds fun.
Detroit.
Sounds like a good time. There's a lot of these like duo shows that I've seen that they're doing like really well. I watched Kenny versus Spenny live. Yeah. That was a trip. That was a real trip.
This, you know, we have like videos and stuff with the and the podcast, Low-Key Immigrants. But I mean, you watch these shows on my IG, like clips.
They're funny. Yeah, I love them.
Yeah, me and him, we have such good chemistry, bro. I challenge anyone. I mean, his chemistry is not like anybody else's. Like,
can't be touched.
You can't fuck with us, man. So.
What else did you do in Lebanon though? You said you weren't there mostly your comedy. You said you were just kind of exploring.
Where my parents are from. I went to my mom and dad's villages.
Is there? I was going to ask you this because I've also been back home a few times. Is there this feeling that you're kind of like you're from there, but you're like an outsider? It's not like you're completely foreign, but it's also not like you're completely from there. Because I think Rami touches on that as well, like in his show when he goes back to Egypt.
It's the same. That same feeling. I started crying a bunch of times. I'm like, it felt like I was a part of it and also felt I wasn't. Right. You get all those emotions. It's so mixed, man. It's like, and then you realize these is where your parents were from. My parents met in Windsor. They didn't meet in Lebanon.
Oh, right.
I went to my dad's village, his city, Zahle. I went to Serail, where my mom's from. We randomly met her, my grandmother's cousin, who took us to the home they grew up in. I FaceTimed my mom. I FaceTimed my grandmother, showed them their house, the church they go to. I FaceTimed all my brothers and my sister and showed them like, yo, this is where mom grew up. This is where mom was born physically. And I got to touch the house. It was like it brings like a completely different perspective as well. Cause you're like, yo, if they didn't really leave.
This is where I'd be. I mean? This is home.
Because
in another universe, you're there.
Yeah, no, I could have or not, basically, you know what I mean? Because they didn't live in the same villages and stuff. So, and it was beautiful. My mom's specifically, you know, we got to eat at this restaurant that my dad would go to with his family. So that was trippy.
That's trippy, yeah.
It was just a lot of those. That to me was like, we were at this convenience store type place. And I found out that the lady that owns it is my cousin's aunt.
No way. Just randomly?
We took pictures and we sent it to them and they were tripped out, man. It was like...
But you didn't have communication before that or anything? You just randomly...
No, most of my family's out of there. Most of my family's gone, bro. Most of my family's either in the U.S. or Canada or all over the world.
Oh, interesting.
We met this guy randomly. We stopped to look at the scenes and then call my mom and asked her where I should go. And then on our way back to see our friends, they were a couple feet away from us. We split up a bit. They were talking to this gentleman that was outside of the store. And my friend Natalie goes, what's your mom's last name? I go, Reshwan. And this guy goes, Saidi, which is my grandmother, Georgette, Layla. And I go, oh, that's my grandmother, my mom and my aunt. And then he goes, oh, I'm the cousin, 2 feet. And then we FaceTime my mom and she hasn't seen him since she was 8.
Jeez,
she left Lebanon.
What a trip.
It was a trip. It was a wild. It was the best experience I've ever had.
It's literally that scene in Rami when that's like you're describing the exact same thing except a Lebanon version. Like,
yeah, and my friends that were with me, we all share that experience till this day. They're not related to my family, but they all
right.
like when that happened, we were all in that experience because I was with Rami's sister, who's I'm friends with, Paul, the comic, Natalie, Selma. We were all there. It was wild.
That's, yeah, what a trip it must be. There was another thing I remember you, I don't know if it was in a special you talked about. We were talking about your first gig, but you said you actually did your first gig in a strip club?
Not my first gig.
Or one of your first.
Strip club in Windsor, and my boy was
which
working.
One would, which one was it? Do you remember?
Leopards?
Okay. Classic. A timeless classic, some would say.
Yes. My boy at the time was working as a door or a booker, or not a booker. He was working the office at the Windsor Yuck Yucks.
Yeah.
And they had called Yuck Yucks looking for comics. And I think he passed my name along. And that's how it all started. I think I did it like two or three times. So I would do it in between. So the stripper would go up. I'd do 5 minutes in between strippers.
Some dude's got a rock hard dick. And then you get up there and you're telling jokes. What a trip.
Yeah, it was a trip, man. It was a trip.
Do they still do that? I wonder, like, do comedies?
No, man. I ain't seen that. Yeah, I haven't seen that in Windsor. I haven't been to those clubs in a long, long time.
I've never seen, like, a strip club promote a comedian, you know? Like,
I mean,
like they'll usually promote wings. They'll promote, like, new girls, like, drinks, like, UFC. I've never seen, like, tonight, after Cinnamon, does her little dance. It's Dave.
I mean, it was short-lived, though. It was short-lived.
The golden era, probably like NBA in the 90s, you know, your time.
Yeah.
If you were doing this today, would you do more of the content route? Would you do more YouTube, TikTok stuff? Or you don't even think about that kind of stuff?
You know, that's funny. This is the conversation we just had all weekend. I was in Whitehorse performing and with Steve is a comic out there who brought me out to Whitehorse. And we talked about that because, you know, he had a comic that has all these followers and on TikTok and they sold out quick. And we had these discussions and, you know, I grew up and I started comedy in both times. So I started it before there was the internet and then now, I forgot how we got to this, but I was like, yeah, man, I mean, the thing is, if you do TikTok videos and all these videos, you're skipping steps in a good way. You're not skipping. You know what I mean? You're not really.
You're getting past those guardians that were there in your time. You're getting past these like walls, right? That there was no other way to get to them.
You just had to go out and just do comedy at a bar to build
right,
your act.
Right.
There was no, you didn't have a fucking, you didn't have a fan base.
Yeah, of course.
For like 7 years until you can build a fan base. You were going places that you had to like, you couldn't make. You had to go and grind. And there's nothing wrong with either side, and no one's better than the other. It's just
It's just different. It's different.
I was born in a different time. I had to make do, and I always wanted to just do stand up and then act. Like I didn't know about social media or TikTok or MySpace. I just really wanted to do my stand up and then act, and like I wasn't like I want to be a podcaster or this or. And I understand times change and you have to adjust and adapt, but I personally. It just doesn't, that stuff doesn't, it doesn't,
it doesn't
excite
interest
me
you.
As much.
Yeah.
It doesn't motivate me as much to do a TikTok or to do a video or to, and there's nothing against it. I know me and I'm trying, like I'll post TikTok videos. It's just not consistent.
It's not something you're excited about though. Like
yeah,
that's tough.
So that's
it's tough to be
so
consistent with that.
That's why it's so inconsistent. But luckily, you know, thank God that I was able to, you know, get on TV and do a movie without doing any of that stuff. But I still dabble. I still try it. It just doesn't come as natural to me. But I do think, you know, if you're doing it, keep doing it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
What's
there's
wrong?
Nothing,
yeah.
Yeah. There's nothing wrong. And I think a lot of times another generation will shit on another generation or whatever. But no, man, if you're able to do and that's how you're getting fan base, then go do it, man. Don't listen to anybody. It's really
do whatever you love, right?
Yeah. Whatever you like and whatever brings comfort to you. So, yeah.
I have this discussion with like some people around me, not necessarily from, like, not a comedy perspective, but from just a life and career perspective. I remember I had these same conversations, let's say 5 years ago. So, just to relate to this a little bit, when I was doing engineering and I fucking like didn't like engineering, I literally made a YouTube channel. I made like videos about like a video game. It was FIFA at the time. I did probably a year of some of the most horrific content you'll see on the internet. I private it now. I don't have the balls to leave it up there. It's so bad and unwatchable. But in that process, learning how to get better in front of a camera, learning lighting, learning how to talk to people, networking, all these like little skills. And it was like a year in, I haven't made a dollar. It's 2 years in, I haven't made 3 years in. I didn't make a penny from YouTube, from ad revenue. Ad revenue wasn't even a thing on my mind, right?
Yeah.
But there was like blips of, okay, it did, little moment here, it did well. And I remember having these conversations with people, why are you doing it? Like engineering pays way more, or like, once you want to just invest in that, I'm like, dude, I don't like engineering. I want to figure out how to do it this way. I'll keep doing it. It's irrelevant. The time is not relevant to me. It's like, I have the freedom to do it. Why not do even a podcast? Whatever. There's a billion podcasts. I started this podcast 3 years ago. Maybe it doesn't go anywhere. Who gives a fuck? I've talked to some of the coolest people on the planet. Like I've got nothing to lose, realistically.
Yeah, that's the way you gotta, I think, look at it. And it's like, you can't, you know, everyone's gonna always have like some kind of opinion and vibe of what you should do. Again, it really just goes down to what, you know, the only thing too that I find sometimes like where it could be not, I guess it's just me, is like when I, as like a fan,
yeah,
it's like if I'm going through TikTok sometimes, like I feel that comedians might fall into the same
trap style. Yeah.
Like it just does, because it's like, if you start chasing the algorithm, it might lose your identity a bit. I mean, that's the only dope thing. That's one of the dope things I loved, you know, doing stand up back then when there was no internet, is like, you know, you found your voice just through
through the crowd and through the work, right?
Yeah. So you found there was a lot of uniqueness because people weren't trying to sell.
Right.
And there was no algorithm to like tell you to. And I'm not saying that these comics are doing that. It's just like, I think that's the thing I sometimes notice with friends of mine who are posting, is that they're chasing an algorithm. And then you kind of, I feel like, I hope they don't lose themselves and then just become like, you know, whatever the algorithm.
Yes. Think. Yeah. Now you. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. That's the only danger. I don't want to, you know, I mean, but it's too, I've been doing it for a while. So I was like, that's the one thing that I remember saying to someone else, like, you know, whatever happens, whether I make it and, you know, whatever I do, I just know that I attempted this art and I was able to find my own voice. That's the only thing nobody can take away from me, is that like, whether I stop today or stop 20 years from now, is at least if you see me do stand up, you're like, oh, he carved his own
bingo vibe. That's spot on, dude. I mean, that's spot on, because even I've had a few videos do like, let's say, viral videos, and I always think like, no one's gonna take that. Like, I have that, I did it. Like, whether you like it or not is irrelevant to me. Or whether the beautiful part about now at this point in my life, in my late 20s, is that I've managed to switch careers without anyone really thinking I could do it. Like, I've gotten completely 180 in careers. So now I have that like confidence that I can keep doing other things that are difficult or things that are whatever. If it takes me 5, 10 years, I don't give a shit. Like, I'll do it. It's just going to be a matter of time. I'll keep pushing. And if I don't do it, I'll learn something along the way. It's not a zero sum game. You can get better at things and not necessarily reach that end goal that you started out with. You can have a different end goal change, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
Along the route. My guy, we've done 45 minutes. There's a few other things I wanted to ask you. Okay, the movie that I didn't see yet. Sometimes I Think About Dying. How did you get that role?
That was the producer, and I believe saw me on Rami, and then the director as well saw me, Rachel Lambert, saw me on Rami, and she sent me a letter.
Oh, wow.
She saw me, and then she, you know, wondered if I was interested in building this character of Robert with her. So it was one of the sweetest letters I've ever, one of the sweetest.
A written letter?
Written. I mean, no, like through email, I think.
Okay. I was going to say, damn.
Yeah, she sent rare. A bird, a carrier pigeon over.
Harry Potter owl.
She wrote it with blood. blood of the greatest
actors. The Game of Thrones stamp.
All the greatest actors and actresses' blood was put in. she sent me this letter, and it was beautiful. It was one of the kindest words anyone's ever said to me. And then I met her on Zoom a bunch. I read the script. I liked the script. I think I read it at the end by 8 times by the end of it. And it was a short film. It was a play. It was three writers, you know, that that put it together, the full length feature. It was a short. The short actually got into Sundance years ago and was shortlisted for an Oscar.
Yeah, when I tried to find the movie, and even I can't even find a trailer. I just found that older version of it or whatever that is.
Yeah, check it out. And that was like, you know, that was directed by Stephanie Abel Horowitz, and it was also Katie is she's the lead actress in that short. Kevin also wrote the play called Killers. That's where it really originated. They're all friends. They all worked, and they all wrote the feature length film.
Wow, so cool.
There's no trailers that it went to Sundance in January. It's not out yet. It premiered at Sundance. I believe they did six showings.
Yeah, I missed the window to watch it online, yeah, unfortunately.
And you could have seen it online, but I mean, now they're just trying to find distribution. So that's how, and it stars, you know, Daisy Ridley's in there, Brittany O'Grady, Parv.
Daisy Ridley's from Star Wars, for anyone that doesn't know.
Yes.
She was
Brie Elrod, Meg Stadler. There's like so many. Jeb. There's like so many. The cast is great. The cast is really great.
Where do you see yourself going from here? Do you feel like the door has been like kicked open and you can kind
of... A little bit. Yeah. I feel like I can do more movies and stuff like that and more TV. That's what I feel it as. I'd like to shoot. I have a couple ideas for a couple specials and stuff like that. But yeah, I feel the door is a little bit more open than it was before. But I think every year it feels like it's a little bit more open.
Right.
You know, so I just take it. You know, if I'm constantly working, I'm good with that.
Yeah, I mean, that's a blessing, right? Are you worried that it's going to take away from the comedy a little bit? Or
No. I love stand-up. I always love stand-up, but I do really like acting. So, I mean, I don't think it'll ever, I mean, it might slow it down, but it's like, I'm fine with that. Cause it's like, it's always there for me.
You know, you're a comedian at your core. You're a comedian.
Yeah. It's always there for me. I always jump on the road or something. Like, I always go to White Horse.
Right. Let's go.
That's what they were telling me.
Come back to St. Clair, man. Come back to the arts.
I am. That's what I'm saying. Like I remember they were like, why do you want to come perform in White Horse? It's like in a basement. I'm like, I love stand-up.
Why not? Yeah. Who gives a fuck?
Stand-up a lot.
Yeah, if you're ever in Windsor, I'd love to see it again. That was a lot of fun last time I went.
We're trying to work on some.
Well, if we'll do it in person, it'll be way more fun. We did it almost, 50 minutes. I don't want to, you know, waste too much of your time. What are you working on right now? Anything you want to promote, plug?
Right now, all I want to promote is I had this idea. Originally, it was just like taking all old relationships and, you know, talking about them. I had some jokes that were connected to that, and it was originally called I Love Her, but the title changed to Miseducation of a Fuckboy.
Yes, I saw that. That was great. That was like the black and white. That was dope. That was great.
Lauryn Hill's Miseducation of Lauryn Hill, like the title. And, we produced it with Macaw Studios.
That was a great little special. It was about 25 minutes?
25 minutes short. It's
perfect.
EP.
Yeah.
You can stream it on Apple.
It's on YouTube as well.
Listen to it. Yeah. If you want to watch the whole thing, which is pretty cool, the way they shot it, that's on YouTube. You can go to my Instagram. The links are there in the link tree. But yeah, that's the thing I want people to check out. You know, we put in some work and it's cool. I just, you know, we have intro titles. We have music on there.
No, it was dope. It was dope.
Yeah. Rob GF, who's an artist from Toronto, check his stuff out. It's on Apple, Spotify. He's a really dope rapper. He's a dope artist, and he lended his music towards it. Mara does the intro voicemail. And then Thinking Out Loud is this cool, like video. It's, you know, their Instagram page is Thinking Out Loud, and it's out of Montreal, and, you know, you'll see it. There's a lot of interviews where people go up and they talk about their vulnerabilities. It's shot in black and white. It's really dope. So I did it in the summer and I used some of the clips from there. I used one of the clips from there as an outro.
Oh, sick.
So we put this together. Very proud of it. Just stream it, watch it, and, you know, help.
Hey, check out the Immigrant Podcast, right? Is on.
Oh, Low Key Immigrants is a
Low Key Immigrants.
Paul, and that is on Apple Podcast, and I believe it's on YouTube as well. The video.
Beautiful.
But yeah.
Dave, beautiful. Fan of yours from here on out.
Thank you. I had a great time, man. Thank you, bro.